No.
Oh yeah, they're intense too. They're like that. It's like going underneath an airplane.
That's it. So then when I plugged my ears, I heard that, and then I heard this like beep, beep, beep. And I was like, am I picking up like a truck backing up some? Because I don't, I have zero idea where it came from.
All sorts of fun things.
Yeah.
Questions about that? Can I ask about the difference between down dog, and, I'm sorry, up dog and cobra?
Yeah.
Straight arms on up dog, right?
Uh-huh.
And it feels like there's more core involved in up dog, would you say? And like, what else might be missing?
Yeah. And up dog, the thighs are lifted, right? The hips and thighs are lifted in cobra, they are not.
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, I thought they were in cobra as well, it's just that the feet were in different.
Like right. Cobra, the legs are on the floor.
Right. Is that what you mean?
The legs are on the ground and cobra. And then up dog, the legs are off the ground.
And when I feel like I learned it with the toe, with actually having the balls of the feet on the ground.
That's,
and like is that just
a variation?
Stop, it's a variation.
The legs for your lower back. In our book it says that's up dog and cobra is with the feet turned over.
Huh.
And then
this is a bridge when it's done.
It's like a modification.
Okay.
For your lower back. The traditional pose is this. Toes back. And then for cobra, this sometimes you'll see it like this as well. So they're just versions of the feet, but the legs are still, legs are still on the ground, essentially. The kneecaps are always lifted no matter what pose you're in, really, because your legs are active. So your knees are lifted.
And then what's the one called where you have your knees down and you're more relaxed? Is it like seal or something?
Like a yin, yeah. Like in yin, seal pose is like this. You'll see you'll see in different books also different names, like I was saying, different variations too of some of these poses. So I can see why it might be confusing. Sometimes it's like, what's that pose? Oh, some person might call it this, some person might call it that. But the classical ones, if you will, again, if you go to like Yoga Journal, for example, they have like a library of asanas. You can always look them up there. That's kind of, I'd say it's like a standard, because it's been around for so long, as a glossary. Also the Light on Yoga, which is from BKS Iyengar, has all the poses in it. It's called Lada Yoga. Lada Yoga, if it doesn't have the poses, it at least has the glossary of terms and all the awesome names. Okay. Lisa. He doesn't define himself as like an ex-alcoholic. He doesn't even go to meetings anymore, but he would get into back bends. He's got a beautiful practice. And I want to make a calendar out of his poses. They're so perfect. But that's his personality. It's like super perfection. But he would get into the back bend, and like the look on his face when he was done with the back bend looked like a heroin addict. in like ecstasy, you know? He'd just be like, whoa, you know? And he would say, like, I don't know if I should do back bends. I'd be like addicted to them. Because the way that they make me feel. And I'm like, it's okay, it's a new body, it's natural, hi. And he's like, hi! I'm like, that's okay. It's really funny, so I think about that a lot because, yeah, for some people it's like quite euphoric and can be challenging if you're not used to that energy. So, we talked about the back bends, how to prep back bends, how to counter back bends, which is why we talk a lot about core and twisting and forward folding. Because core, twisting, and forward folding are ways to prep and to counter and to neutralize back bends. Obviously, big back bend, like we were just talking about, is a lot of energy. So it's like if I just ended in a back bend and then said, okay, see you guys, you'd be like, what do I do with this energy, right? So you gotta take people down several notches. And so today, your big back bend was at like maybe 12 o'clock, something like that. So the class started, and I forgot, it was 12:15. Oh no, it's 12:30. And I was actually glad it was 12:30 ending because I got to give you a half hour cool down. And you can see how much energy you had and how long it took you to kind of get down the mountain, so to speak. So we did a lot. We did kind of a heavy practice to like really warm your body up to get to some of those peak poses like Vistrasana and the full wheel. And then I gave you twists, core, and lots of forward folding, hip opening, and then Shavasana. So hip openers is another one that is good for back bend. Because we're working those big muscles, those outer hip muscles, so you need to release the muscles. The core, this is just repeating stuff from yesterday, is the what to the spine. What did I say about the
airbag?
Airbag. The core is your airbag, so really doing a lot of planks and things like that in the beginning to just get that core going. I did a lot of balancing and, you know, things like this. Are still core. We did some prep here. Like obviously, the cat cow is a good prep for back bend, but doing some of these core strengtheners, these are really easy to teach, and it helps to inform the outer hips and balance, which is really important, and firming everything in to the midline. And I could teach like the instruction of the pelvis here and how to keep it neutral. And then I did this, right? So I added a variation to it to give ourselves a little bit of that Dhanurasana, eventually Ustrasana, right? So I'm starting to imprint, and this is a little bit of a sequencing talk too, but I start to imprint some actions in the body right away in the beginning, in the warm-ups. And so that's a good thing to do, you know, when you're starting to teach, to think of things that look like the other poses, so that by the time they get into those poses, they've been doing it over and over again. We did a lot of hip flexion and opening the hips to get open there. We did, you know, several versions of Shavasana, like I said I was going to do yesterday. And I did arms in every direction. I had you guys start in this Kamakasana because I was like, well, I contemplated. I was trying to see how much the group could take. And I wasn't quite sure how far I'd be able to push you guys, so I really was like tuning in, is this too much, you know? And could tell, you know, starting to like, ooh, this is gonna be a good class. Everyone was pretty open to it. I was gonna throw in a Natarajasana also at one point and do like a standing version of a back bend, but I skipped it, and then I just did it on the floor later, like this. That was like my floor Natarajasana because I could tell people needed a break.
Oh, speaking of break, when we're in the plank and like we have, you know, the back leg and then the opposite arm extended, I feel like my my shoulders and everything, I feel like all my joints are stacked, mm-hmm. but like my arms fatigue so quickly. Is that just because I don't have strength, or am I missing something in my alignment that would make it so I'm not? And maybe it's just because of my work. I don't know, but I'm just
wondering. It could be that your back. It could be that you're just working on balance. Your triceps aren't as strong as maybe you thought. I don't know. I mean,
they're not as strong as I used to be.
Right. I mean, you're just working on them. You know, I didn't see you collapsing in any way.
Okay.
I was watching your body.
Okay.
So you were still, you know, open here. That's hard to balance on one knee and one arm.
I just felt like it was mainly in my arm. Like, I felt fine in my core and in my legs and everything. It was just, primarily my right arm, which is my working arm.
Okay. Yeah, so it's just fatigue.
I just need to do some tricep push-ups.
Yeah, I mean, you don't do a lot of chaturangas, you know. People who are doing those kinds of poses obviously get, like, a little bit developed in their arms
mm-hmm.
because they're doing that so much, but...
It's really specific though too.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
kind of you just have to do that pose.
Right.
So I think because there's so many intrinsic muscles and all these things working together that other activities don't demand of us.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, so
right.
it might be just do more of that. Like
we
don't hold it to the point where there's irritation.
Yeah.
It was really helpful when you had us push back through our heels.
Uh-huh.
I did feel my core engaged like three times more than
mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow. Okay.
Yeah, legs, right? Yeah. And so even though I didn't miss, I mean, today I kind of tried to do platforms for you guys just to imprint it. I did a lot of, I don't normally, well, maybe I do sometimes. You go to my classes sometimes. I don't tend to do over alignment. I did a lot of alignment for you guys today. A lot of alignment.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't really do any philosophy whatsoever. It was just like alignment because I wanted you guys to hear the language. So you can teach that. I mean, that alignment to me is a theme. I can drill a body part like crazy. You know, like that could be a theme for me. And I tend to do that actually if I'm teaching an alignment flow class because I like it. I like people to get in their bodies. So for me, that's just one way I get them into their body and get them out of their heads. And get them grounded, right? But I didn't always teach that way. I used to teach all philosophy and like very little alignment, and I just switched. I think it was when I got injured in my own body, I guess, that I switched. And I think it's also because I became a teacher trainer. So it's like I want to teach, you know, things that I know. So, but I did that on purpose too, so you guys could hear all the actions over and over and over again. And that's how I learned, you know, how to teach. Was just going to classes and hearing my trainers teach these things over and over. So, where was I? We were at, opposite arm walks. Yeah, so I did that to imprint, because I'm just kind of showing you how to imprint certain things. And then I did a non-traditional, actually, way of teaching where I didn't do all the sun salutations to start. I just wanted you guys to see something different.
Mm-hmm.
Where I did like a bunch of lunges and stuff first before we did any sun salutations. And you can do that, like you have some creative freedom, right? Because I was just imprinting again certain aspects of the pelvis, torso, and arms. So we did a lot of lunge, a lot of crescents, and we did warrior one. And primarily back bending prep poses. And then I went to the top of the mat, we did some sun salutations, and we did some warriors and things like that, big muscle group poses to open up the hips again. And people just like that. Like sometimes you just throw things in because people love them, you know. Like, well, I came to vinyasa, I didn't even get my warrior two. It's like, all right, well, here, just give you warrior two and reverse warrior. And I was like, and then I went back to, then I went on the floor and did some prep poses, shalabhasanas, in different directions with the arms. And then we did warrior ones, we did some humble warriors. So I was just trying to get some different arm positions in. Then I was like, oh god, I didn't even get any twisting yet. So then we did some of the chair twists, and I meant to do twisting crescents and a couple of twisting poses. So I would probably pepper in, if if I were to do it again, because I looked up and I thought it was 12:15, and I thought it was almost over, and then realized later it wasn't. So I would have probably given you more standing twisting poses. Standing twisting poses would be things like a reverse triangle, or like a standing split, partner to Ardha Chandrasana, or even like a, I don't even think we did this. Did we do like a crescent twist? I don't think we did.
Didn't we do something?
Or maybe did we do something on the ground?
Put our knee down.
Maybe we
thought, or did, no, we lifted our knee.
Did we?
Yeah, we had a block on the outside.
Oh, we did this. We did
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
A variation. Okay. So yeah, those are good. All those are good to open up the thoracic. So having a bunch of twists. And yeah, and then I think we did, you know, just show things on the ground, but then we did Ustrasana. Then we got down after Ustrasana, and I was like, okay, now I gotta get the mountain to go down. But I threw in a wheel because I was like, well, we've been practicing it, and so if anybody wants to practice it, they can go ahead. Right now, you're prepared to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put blocks under the feet, gave people a little break for the back and bridge. Then we did full wheel. And then I think what we did is we came up. That's right, we came up and I did a twist to release the back. So you can twist, you know, twists can be seated twists. They can be standing twists, right? They can be prone on your back twists. I don't even think I gave a twist like this, actually.
No.
That's my new favorite twist.
Now these are great. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I gave you the back bend, and then I had you, I think, take happy baby pose. I did something to neutralize your spine. Then we did a little bit, maybe a core, or did I do core before? I think you did some core before the back bend. You did back bend. Just doing a bit of core work. So I kind of peppered things in a little bit at a time. So you can get a feel for the kind of different things that you. Then I did a lot of forward folding. Again, these are counter poses to back bends. I gave you an open twist, and then a Janu Shirsasana, forward fold. And then I offered, I didn't really teach Halasana and back bends, although I could have. I had some time. I could have taught those a little bit more in depth, but there were only like one or two people that were going to get into it, so I helped them privately and separately. But a nice shoulder stand practice, if people were really into it, would have been great to do because it's countering. We've already done so much work with the shoulders going back. You would have been really prepared to do a full on. Most of the time when we teach back in classes, I'll teach a full shoulder stand practice because you're prepped for it. Shoulder stands, you need a lot of opening in the thoracic. To do shoulder stand. And Candace was going up, and one other woman is going up. And when we get to inversions weekend, I'll teach you all about shoulder stand and headstand when we get there. But yeah, you need a lot of opening. So that's all the stuff that we were doing to get to that place. So you're sitting on your shoulders and you're really opening your neck. And shoulder stand is one of those relaxation poses. It doesn't feel relaxing when we don't practice it all the time. It's a big pose. But for the nervous system, it's a relaxation. Because so much of your blood is draining to your head and to your digestive tract and everything because it's the reverse blood flow. So your heart gets a break. But, you know, it's a big part. It requires a lot of core work, as we were talking, is like really sucking in the core and lifting up out of our back. So most of the weight eventually is distributed in the forearm. At first it might feel like, I feel like someone getting poisoned. A lot of it's distributed into your elbows. Right? You're saying, oh, it feels in my elbows.
Yeah.
Eventually, it'll move a little bit more into the other aspects of the upper arm. But we don't want the legs to be tilted over our face in that pose. We want the whole body to be upright. If you're to look at it, it's shoulders, hips, ankles. It's completely Tadasana in
So then wouldn't there be weight on the shoulders?
So eventually there'll be weight completely evenly distributed on your upper arm.
So would your arms be out or in?
In.
In, okay.
In, yeah. So I'll teach it. If you want, I can show it to you today. If you want. You want to see it?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so the way that I like to teach it, and get blankets. And there's a variety of ways to teach it. But I'll just show it to you, and then we can break it down in versions weekends and really do it. Everyone can do it. But because we did all that back bending, I'll just show you this. So the way that I like to teach it is you take a blanket and make sure it's folded the proper way here. It's not folded in the traditional way. It's to get a square. So you have one side that is the rounded edge. Some of these are folded that way, some of them are not. Okay. And you put it right up to the edge of the mat. And the reason why you want that rounded is because you want your shoulders to be supported, but your neck to be released. And then, strap, you don't have to use a strap, but I'm going to show you with a strap just so you can see something. How much you want your arms in and your shoulders in. So much like you do a handstand or the back bend, it's the same exact arms that we did yesterday. Mm-hmm. Let me put that to the side. And what I've been doing lately is actually working with a block, which I actually really enjoy too. So you come back and at least if you can't see, you bring your shoulders all the way up to the edge. And you can see here how my shoulder is about an inch, maybe a little less, away from the edge. You grab the outer edges of the mat, and you roll your arm bones under, right? So I'm just starting here. This is for some people, if they need like support, like let's say you can't get your knees up and over, they can have the support in the block, which gives them a little bit more lift to get their legs up and over. And then once your toes are back there, now if your toes don't hit the mat, I encourage people to bend their knees into their face. I know it's a little weird, but then it helps me to roll my shoulder heads under. And I'm looking for a pike. So here, the shoulder blades, here's my strap.
Oh, so nice.
So what you can do is you can actually wear a strap. This is where you would put it on. It's right here. Okay, so all that stuff that we did is to bring the shoulders together. Notice my neck, there's no flattening of my neck whatsoever, right? You guys see that?
Mm-hmm.
Some people interlace, do you see something flattening? Hold on, let me get in it.
I mean your neck looks lengthened. It doesn't, I don't see a lordotic curve in your cervical spine.
It's a lordotic curve.
You know what I mean? There's not that arch.
You see that there? Is that better?
I'm not trying to correct you, I'm just trying to get
clear
about, because
you want to be able to have a pencil
here, so I can
go underneath your neck. Oh yeah.
So what you're saying is that, yeah.
I want to make sure that you can stick your finger or a pen or a pencil or a hand completely under there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how much I want to be on my shoulders. Do you guys see how much I'm on my shoulders?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And my shoulder blades are going to be in, yeah? So now I'm going to bend my elbows. So this is where the strap comes in handy. See how much lift I can get by using my hands?
Oh, it feels so much better.
And then when I lift up, And then keep walking the hands up. Most people are going to go like this. So much weight in your head. So you want to actually have your legs point straight up. And you'll keep walking your hands up till they're almost by your shoulder blades. You see how much lift that is?
Mm-hmm.
It requires a lot of core. I'm really using my core right now to lift me up. I notice I never move my head.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Never, never. And then I'm just breathing here. So once you get to this place, I feel it in my elbows, primarily, and my upper arms. But they should feel even, shoulders and elbows. And then there's the C7, which is the biggest bone at the base of your neck. You want to pull that in. You don't want that sitting on the floor. And then you come down. Slow. And now I can release this strap. It's hard to use a strap. You kind of have to adapt it to it. You could put this block right here. Getting really good at that, right? This helps people bring themselves down. I would do this for people.
Because your blank, there's too much blank.
There's blank in there. But people can hit their tailbone on it like that, which gives them a little bit of space. Without popping the neck. You see how I did that because I don't want to pop my neck up. A lot of people like pop their whole chest up.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is we really want to integrate the neck. If there's any sort of like compression at all, which hopefully there isn't. And then you could do a soft fish, which would just be like this. Or a full fish, which would be like this. Right? Just like that, which feels really good. The opposite of what you're just doing. So this pose, even though it's a big pose, is a relaxation pose. It actually takes your nervous system down. And it's perfect after back bends if you teach that, right? Like you don't have to teach. I remember yesterday we did the one against the wall where we climbed our legs up and we just like a mini one. That's fine. Or legs up the wall. Just do this. It's also a shoulder stand. You know, technically. So I offered this at the end of class. Nobody took it. But you could do something like this. You could do any one of those other variations where the hips are on the blocks or something like that. Right.
And that's good
those.
For women who are on their menstrual.
Yeah.
So it's not pelvis up so much.
Totally. Totally. And then twisting is nice after these types of poses to just get that nice twist. Okay? I'm just offering these to show you what you could do. Okay, so what else is core? What's core? Core is kind of a fun subject.
You mean like what muscle groups make up your core?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I know you know this because you're a massage therapist and you do a lot of anatomy probing. Why don't you tell us about?
So in my opinion, I think glutes are actually part of your core.
Yeah.
And your thighs.
I agree, because you just have that experience today, right? Legs are part of the core. I totally agree with that.
Latissimus dorsi, I always say, because it's the only muscle that connects the shoulder complex to the
mm-hmm.
pelvis complex.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. Right, like, there's core doesn't just have to be in front of our body, right? A lot of people think core is like the belly. And it's also a pelvic floor, right? Which is kind of associated with the legs in a way, right? Energetically. So it's like we've got the bottom, right, between the anus and the pubic bone, right? We've got the perineum, we've got that muscular, just like a basket down there, forward, back, side, side. Have you ever looked at what the pelvic floor looks like? It's so fascinating. Looks like an infinity sign. It is an infinity sign if you were to look at it. It's fascinating. I don't have any photos. So it's like a basket weave. It goes side to side, it goes front to back. And so when we're talking about like Mula Bandha, sometimes people will say, you know, pull up Mulabandha, or you'll hear some of these terms, right? And what it really is finding the four points of the pelvic, the bottom of the pelvis. Pubic bone, anus, sit bones. Makes a diamond, if you will. Pubic bone, anus, sit bones. And so pulling that whole thing up, that's Mulabandha. So we were talking about, someone was saying perineum yesterday. Was that one?
Oh, no.
Draw your perineum up, is that
yeah.
what she said?
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure what she was talking about at that moment because I thought she was pointing to her hips, mm-hmm. but maybe she had heard that in class. So like the perineum is, are those muscles, right, between the anus and the yoni, I'm just saying, okay? Whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Anus and the juicy parts. So drawing it in and up. And that stabilizes us. The other way that you can find those muscles, besides thinking of it as like the triangle, is firming the outer hips. We'll just keep bringing that back, right? Firming my outer hips, like you could do that with a block. Find that in your body. If I have a block in between my thighs and I firm my outer hips, it draws those muscles up automatically. So when I do like core specific classes, I use a lot of blocks. If I'm doing a handstand class, where I know that's going to be my peak, or a headstand class, or even a shoulder stand class. If I know I need a lot of core strength to like pick up my body, I'm going to do a lot of stuff like this. I might do sun salutations with blocks so that they're squeezing the whole time. And by the time they get to wherever they need to go, you know, when they go to jump up, they've got that idea imprinted in their hips, their core, right, strength. So to me, yes, legs is a deep, deep, tremendous part of core, as well as the pelvic floor muscles, part of the pelvis, if you will, I guess, if you want to call it that. And then you've got the muscles that are just three layers of core muscles, the transverse abdominis, the obliques, right, that are, the obliques come around and they're like diagonal muscles, right? And then you've got your rectus abdominis muscles, which are the six-pack abs, which are superficial muscles, but not the deep ones.
What most people think of when you say core.
Right, everyone's like, oh, look at my six-pack, right? Yeah. I used to have one.
That's
really
funny.
I used to just have like the side ones, you know, over here a little bit, but I didn't do it. I was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I had no strength whatsoever in my core. That was what was ironic about it. So it wasn't really until I had kids where I really recognized the power of the transverse abdominis. But the transverse abdominis, where you want to get strong in your yoga practice, is really between the navel and the pubic bone. Those muscles right here, down here, the lower muscles, because they affect what?
Your lower back.
Your lower back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then psoas, you know, some of these bigger, like you were saying, leg muscles, like that wrap around from the back. They go through the pelvis and up to your what's the L? Do you know the
insertion? For the psoas. So the psoas actually looks ribbed. It's controversial because like where we learned it, it's L1 through L4, and the QL actually attaches to the 12th rib.
Okay, but
I mean, you could look at a million different anatomy
right.
books and get a million different answers,
yeah.
especially even when it comes to like what they call the muscle.
Yeah.
It makes it really hard.
It's fascinating, right? So it's like, so all the hip flexion that we're doing in our culture, again, we'll talk about that, is like, if it's going through your pelvis and it's attaching to your back and it's tipping you forward all the time, you know, obviously it's hard to get into back bend. It's not a natural function necessarily of our body at this moment in time in a culture, right?
We're already shortened.
We're shortened. And so now, what do we get? Back pain, right? Like that low back pain is probably one of the most, I mean, you would know, you probably see people
yes.
for this all the time.
I do see people for low back pain a lot, and I always address the psoas.
Yeah.
But how I address it depends on what their activities are, if I address it first or if I address it at the end.
Interesting.
So,
you mean in a treatment series or in a session?
In a session.
In one session.
Mm-hmm. No, I always address it every session.
Mm-hmm.
unless they're like a little bit inflamed from the first session. But most of my people, I have enough time in between, you know, and I'm giving them work to do. So if they're not doing the work,
you know, you would know. So yeah, so legs are attached to pelvis. Pelvis is affecting our core, or our core is affecting our pelvis, and they're both affecting each other. And it's the stabilizers. And then you've got the obliques. The obliques, we work those a lot in planks, in triangle poses, twists. We're using our obliques. Those are the twisting muscles. And so you've got a lot going on in core. So it was just to explain that, yes, it's not just the rectus abdominis getting a six-pack. It's like there's a lot going on there. Yeah. And so depending on what you're teaching, you'll get to play around with core. And I know I said it today. I try not to say core very often in yoga because it is so many parts of it. But if I want to do something quickly and really it's just like drawing the belly in, I might say bring your core muscle, like draw your core muscles in or something. But yeah, it's like, it's an anatomy thing. Drawing your belly in towards your spine is usually the kind of cues that I give a lot.
In yoga classes, I know the connection with the psoas, but do you tend to think that when people work on their core, they have emotional things come up just because of the protective nature of our center?
I think so many areas of the body, emotional issues come up. You know, to me, it's like every area of the body has emotional energy in it. But yeah, sure. You know, what's their chakra? Power center. There's a lot of people walking around that have given up their power. Or their power's been taken from them, however you want to look at it. So yeah, worth issues, value issues, confidence issues, right? Anytime our power is taken away from us, there's a lot of anger. I always laugh because if I do a full twisting class, people get really angry. They really do, and I watch it. It's great. I love it. I'm like, if you're feeling angry right now, then people will start laughing because they are. You know, you can see it. You can see it come up. I'm like, then you're right in the right place at the right time because I'm trying to help you get that out of your body. Core is great for digestion as well. And so you can use that also for cramps and things like that. You can also focus on core. Let me open your book because I want to see where they, let me see what they say here in your book. Always fun if they have one.
So, and also, I don't know what page this is, but under anatomy, there's an actual section for psoas, and it gives you a good picture. And psoas actually hooks kind of anterior, meaning the front of your body, lateral on your
anterior lateral.
Yeah. Yeah. So it hooks to the transverse processes that, like, on the front of the transverse processes, yeah. So when your psoas gets tight, it can not only, you know, like bend us this way,
yeah,
or extend it this way, it can put a twist in your spine. So like
for
me with my scoliosis, that psoas plays a huge role in twisting my lower spine. So I think it's really good to be able to like look at pictures and then you can kind
of see. This is in your manual?
Yeah, it's under anatomy.
Let's look at that, because that is really good to know. That's what happened to my back. When my back went out, my pelvis was twisted, and they had to untwist it. It took about a year and a half to untwist it.
Mm-hmm.
And it still has some residual things that happen periodically to it. Now it's my rib cage and my upper back that's twisting.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going up my body, you know?
Mine went down my body.
Oh, really? That's funny,
yeah.
Mine went up. All right, let me see. Where is that? Okay.
It's like I said, it's like about 25 to 30 minutes.
Anatomy and physiology is so accurate.
Yes.
And so this actually, I think it was Candace who brought this up the last time too, about leg lifts. And if we're turning on our hip flexors or if we're doing abdominals,
right?
That's in here too, which is a good read because
it's interesting with core, because when we're doing the leg lifts, we are engaging our hip flexors, but there's, if we take out the legs in some of the leg lifts, then we can actually isolate the transverse abdominal. And they have that in here, actually. There's a picture also of that they're talking about. So that's good. That's just good to know as well.
I thought I really liked how you cue our prone spinal extensions, like before getting into the superhero pose.
Oh, yeah.
But and I don't know how people pick it up if they aren't already oriented to it. You know, when it's just like draw the belly, the line of the belly up, or draw the top of the pelvis towards the belly button. But that's a big thing that I notice. It's like a real subtle way of working the spinal extension without just going into a released transverse abdominis anterior tilt.
Yes.
You know, then compresses the spine, and people are like, oh, I can't do any of that stuff because it tweaks out my back, or it pinches my nerves, or, and they're actually like shortening and compressing to begin with, and then just exaggerating that.
Yeah.
But you cued us nicely by drawing.
Yeah, it was such a big, that was a big learning for me in my own body, which is also why I teach it, because it prevented me from hyperextension in my back.
Exactly.
It healed my back doing that.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, and it forces the glutes to engage more.
Right. Right.
Just,
Is this the picture that you're talking about?
Yeah.
So can you guys find that? Because it's good to look at.
So if you look on the side that the muscle is not at, you see like the little pokey things off to the side?
Uh-huh.
That's the transverse processes of your vertebra.
Uh-huh.
So that muscle hooks on the front and the side, and hooks on the front of those and the side of each vertebra.
Yeah, and we're looking at, just so some of you know, it's below the rib cage, right? Because those are two floating ribs.
Right, and we're looking at it like if somebody was standing in front of us. Yeah.
So is that right, lowest rib, is that T12?
Mm-hmm.
That's your floating rib.
Mm-hmm. So that's your floating rib, that's your T12. So check that out. I mean, this is a huge, I was always shocked by how big, it's the biggest muscle in our body. It's the thickest muscle in our body, that's what I mean. It's not the longest,
right.
It's the thickest.
So you can see it attaches right, and it is very close. So that's why I think that there is probably controversy about whether or not it actually attaches to the 12th rib,
mm-hmm.
because it is on the L1.
Mm-hmm.
It always depends on who's drawing, and who knows, some people's bodies grows, they grow just, they grow so different.
Yes, I know it. I notice it.
Says function. The psoas helps to stabilize the spine. It provides support, forming a shelf for the vital organs of the abdominal core. It is considered to be the most important hip flexor. The other hip flexors include the sartorius, which is the longest, right? Muscle in our body.
Yeah.
The tensor fascia lata, TFL.
Which is like the shortest.
The shortest, right. And that's the one that's on the side, right? Mm-hmm. On the hip. The rectus femoris. The pectineus and the adductor brevis. Beautiful names. So all of those are the hip flexors, the quads, really. So from standing, hip flexors lift the leg to step on a stool. From a supine position, hip flexors lift the leg or lift the torso, which is why today I had you press your feet down to lift your torso. Remember when we were in the names are all escaping me right now. I obviously need more tea. Locust pose or shalabhasana, I have to press your feet down and legs down, because that push can help us give us the gravity and the lift of the spine, right, of the torso. And then it also obviously is lifting the leg. So when we went into like dhanurasana, your hip flexors are lifting that leg. Due to its size and location, the psoas affects flexibility and posture. The psoas is connected through the fascia to the diaphragm, which affects both our breath and our fear reflex. This is interesting. I like that they said that. Because if you have tight psoas, like when I got pregnant, I went to a guy who did deep tissue
oh my God, Elise. And he would touch my psoas, I would literally jump off the table.
Yeah.
And I had massive amounts of fear come up for me during the birth, before birth. I definitely died in childbirth in other lifetimes, I was sure of it, because it was weird fear. It was like, I'm gonna die in this childbirth, I'm freaking out. Like, I was flipping. And everyone's like, are you going crazy? And I was like, I think so. And so, but he put me on the table, and I would literally, like, jump 3 feet in the air. I was just like, do not touch me there. And he was like, if you can't take this, you are not going to get through your childbirth. I mean, that was his whole thing. He was like, I have to be able to release these muscles for you. This is where your fear is coming from. Deep, deep fear in that psoas muscle. And so eventually, a couple sessions in, he got me to relax a little bit. But it definitely came up during my pregnancy.
How long were you when he was doing this type?
Oh my God, probably in the 20s, in the weeks in the 20s.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So did he do it sideline for you?
Mm-hmm.
Did you try and
both.
Ask that way? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was so
intense.
I was like, this is worse than childbirth. To me, it was worse than childbirth by far. But yeah, so it holds a lot of fear. I talk about this in the end a lot, because this muscle does, it's our fight or flight muscle, right? We use it a lot in driving. And think of an impact of how much this muscle takes just in driving your car throughout the week.
Right.
Can you imagine, right? So there's a lot of fear that's connected to it. Related to the stress response, the psoas contracts involuntarily when the emotional state indicates stress. Hmm. So it's like a lockdown muscle. So does it affect your flexibility and all these other things? Absolutely, right? Oh, here, yeah. An essential aspect is it's the fight, flight, freeze response. It expresses our innate sense of safety. The psoas is both an instinctive as well as emotionally responsive muscle. And by tuning into this muscle, without the use of invasive or manipulative approaches, we can gain a deeper sense of calm, integrity, and empowerment. I love that. So, it's part of core, in a way, right? For sure. And if you go three pages before that, spining and strengthening the TA, they're talking about the transverse abdominis. This would be a good section to read. And before that is components of the core. So let's go to the core. Let's just start with the core section, because it's kind of right before that. So it says key points. The core includes many different muscles. I didn't even know this was in here, so I'm glad this is in here. Including the spine and the pelvis. The term core refers to the abdominal muscles and the back muscles, including the erector spinae and the multipodi muscles. So these are all the muscles along your spine. And many more refined definitions. The diaphragm and the pelvic floor. Some definitions include the inner thighs, so we all talk about that. Glad we're on track. All right, muscles that stabilize the spine and the pelvis and run the entire length of the torso. The abs have very limited and specific action, and what experts refer to as the core actually consists of many different muscles, stabilizers of the spine and the pelvis, and run the entire length of the torso. When these muscles contract, they stabilize the spine, the pelvis, and the shoulder girdle, and create a solid base of support. Your core most often acts as a stabilizer and force transfer center rather than a prime mover. That makes sense. Yet consistently, people focus on training their core as a prime mover and in isolation. Mm-hmm. This would be doing crunches, right? Yeah, or back extensions versus functional movements. Mm-hmm. I like that. That's smart. Depending on who you ask, the core can refer simply to the muscles of the midsection, but that's not what we're talking about, right? As far as I know, I'm just skipping ahead, none of these definitions are wrong, but the core is simply a very appealing yoga and fitness buzzword. And teachers, including myself, often use it to describe centrally located muscles that we believe are part of that work. Okay. So again, we've got the rectus abdominis, the internal and external obliques, the transverse abdominis, the back muscles, the spinal erectors, the multipodi muscles. And I would agree, weak multipodi, which does correlate with back pain, that was part of my issue too. And then it's got these pictures, which is great, because now you can see this transverse abdominis, this lower level, where the pelvic floor muscles are, where the obliques are, and all these layers, yeah? And all the erector spinae muscles along the spine. So there is quite a bit of core here.
to look at. And so when we're talking about core, like we've just been talking about, there's so many ways that you can teach core, because you can teach core for back bends, you can teach core to do the six pack, you can teach core to stabilize for inversions, you can teach core for prenatal, teach the postnatal to teach the pelvic floor muscles. The obliques turn the torso and twisting. So you're going to use core. I kind of pepper core into every class because really you kind of need it in every class, right? When you're doing your poses, even though you're not focused on your core, you're still using your core, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think yoga is so powerful too, because of that reason. You know, we're not just overdoing a certain muscle group. We're really using the whole set, the whole trunk. You guys want to do this? This little, there's like a little thing in here that's about core stabilization, which I could read while you're doing it, which I like. I haven't read it straight through, but I'm looking at it, and I'm like, oh, I know what they're doing. And I've done this before in classes. So if you lie on your back, legs together, knees up. So bend knees is what we're trying to say. Lie on your back, bend knees. I'm like, what are they saying? Bend your knees. Put your feet up. That's what they're trying to say.
Where are you?
I'll adjust it, but it's
right before the transverse abdominis. It's just a little exercise that they put in here. I'm going to change it slightly, but this is fun to kind of just do in your own body.
This is good, though. I do like how this vagus under the most often act as a stabilizer. You know, where there's people focus on training the core as a prime mover and in isolation as versus like
functional
movement.
Yeah, that's so
which
smart,
we teach right? Functional movement every day in CrossFit. It's core to extremity power.
Uh-huh.
But I can't tell you how many people are like, no, CrossFit's too aggressive for me. I'll stick to yoga. It's like, it's the same
thing. It's the same thing. Yeah, okay. Right. Oh, that's interesting. I love that. This is an exercise shared by Judith Lassiter, who is a very famous yogi. She's a wonderful teacher. And this is a one for stabilization, okay? And so I'm just going to read it. To get the experience of feeling the abdominal muscles in their role as stabilizers, okay? So feet are on the floor, knees pointing up. Just want you to lift one leg off the floor. So maybe just your right leg. Noticing the contraction of your abdominals when you do that. Just a little bit. This is an example of the abdominals stabilizing your trunk. Now place thumbs on the lower ribs and your middle fingers on the iliac crest, which are your hip bones.
The lower what?
Lower ribs. Okay. Your thumbs on your lowest rib and your middle fingers on the iliac crest or your hip bones. So if you don't know what that means, you can look up to it. So it's like, just showing you the distance between your lower ribs and your iliac bones. Okay. Lift the leg about 5 inches off the floor and then outward 10 inches. It's like straightening your leg. Yeah.
Hmm.
If the abdominals are stabilizing, there will be no lifting of the opposite side of the pelvis. The greater the movement experience, the less the stabilization the abs are providing. Mm-hmm. And then bring your knee, bend your knee, place your foot back on the floor. Not only is this exercise a good way to become aware of your habit of not stabilizing your abdominals when you move, it can also be a strengthening exercise. I did this actually in postnatal. This is like a lot of postnatal work because this is for your transverse. So you can keep doing that. So keep the ribs and the front of your pelvis connected, right? That's what we're doing when I talk to you about lifting your front hips up and softening your bottom ribs. It's basically that. And you're just going to lift your foot off the floor, bend the knee, and straighten the leg, and see if you cannot twist your pelvis. How's that working for you, Shelby? You're getting better at it, yeah? I can see you're not moving, but you do on one side a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's good because you can start to see which side of your body destabilizes. I know I do it on one side. Cool, right? Let me give you another one. There's another TA one. The transverse abdominis. Using breath to strengthen the TA, the transverse abdominis. This simple exercise strengthens the girdling muscles that stabilize the lower back and the pelvis. You can do the motion with every breath in your yoga practice, but I like to teach it lying on the floor where you can more easily feel the motion of the spine and you aren't distracted. So lie on the floor, your knees bent, your feet flat on the floor. Notice how this position flattens your lower back curve. Now, that may happen for some people and it may not happen for others. I'm just letting you know if you're hyperextender. Place your palms on your belly. As you inhale, allow your belly to soften. As you exhale, imagine that you are closing the zipper on a too tight pair of jeans. Pull in your belly, starting at the bottom where the pubic bone is, and contract upward towards the bottom of your ribs. You might feel your belly hollow out and your lower back press more into the floor. On the following inhale, imagine that you are breathing in from your collarbones all the way down. Keep your belly pulled in strongly for the first half of the inhale, and then slowly allow it to relax in the second half. Of the inhale. Huh. Want me to say that again? Mm-hmm. On the following inhale, imagine you're breathing in from your collarbones down. Keep your belly pulled in strongly for the first half of the inhale, and then allow it to relax in the second half. With each following exhale, close the zipper again. Make the contraction just strong enough to feel the muscles, not so strong as to affect the breath. So that's pretty interesting. Keep relaxing the rest of your body, releasing tension in the upper body, the neck, the shoulders, and the jaw. So integrating the breath in that way, using the breath to strengthen the TA, the transverse abdominis. That's interesting. Stay there. When performing a lower abdominal exercise, such as a leg lift, you can tell if you're not using the transverse abdominis. If your rectus abdominis, your six-pack muscle, pokes out and looks like what they're calling a bread loaf. Oh, that's so funny. So if you were to do a little leg lift and look down at your belly, let me know if you see that. And I'll show you what it looks like, just so you guys know. Do you see how when her legs are down, the sides of her waist go in and it looks rounded here? Mm-hmm. That's what they're talking about. So when performing lower abdominal exercises, you're not using the transverse if you see just the rectus abdominis. So that's interesting. Sometimes I look at that and see, like here, I'm not doing the transverse because right here, it's poking up. Mm. So it looks like a bread loaf. So I have to really engage the pubic bone muscle and then it would flatten out. Or the muscle right below the navel. Above the pubic bone, below the navel. During your leg lifts. Try to have a flatter belly, not that bread loaf. That's funny, I've never heard it expressed like that.
What if your bread loaf goes from narrower to wider?
Right.
That means you must be engaging your transverse, yes. Just not all the way
yet. Right, right. So like instead of having the bread loaf, you're flattening your dough and you're using those lower muscles. I just felt that in my body. And I could feel the difference. That was really interesting. So if you lift one leg at a time, going from that bread loaf to wider, and then bringing it down even below the belly.
Right.
And you should be able to feel it too, because your rectus abdominis is only so wide.
Right.
Right? So if you're on your sides and you feel that contraction.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And it's obliques too, right? Yeah. So it's cool stuff.
I just find that I have to work with people a lot more subtly than we tend to want to. You know,
yes.
Like, don't be attached to having a lot of movement.
Right.
Like externally, like, connect with it on the breath, exaggerating the breath. Feel, you know, but
it's so true.
Because it, everybody
so
wants
true.
To skip it and go straight to the big.
Yeah,
to
the big things.
Yeah.
And those small ones are, these are, that's all I did post-pregnancy for weeks. And I was like, wow, that's so good. You know, just little tiny things to stabilize my body. And they make a big difference, a really big difference.
I worked with a pro basketball player who was having lower back pain. We did trade, he was doing drills with me and stuff, and he would get so frustrated because he wouldn't leave the mat, he'd hardly do anything, and he'd be dripping sweat, and it was all exactly these kind of very small, subtle, you know, things. Like, yeah, you have all the big muscles, you're doing all the big actions, but you don't know how to support yourself, actually.
Yeah, like
from
the most physical, big muscles.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was
that's
a great,
great.
That's
experience.
Uh-huh.
I love that.
Slowing down tells you a lot.
It does, yeah.
Michelle, what were you saying? Like, I was getting zipper imagery, but then you were saying spread.
Well, I was saying when you're, if you touch on the sides, because this is your rectus abdominis here. So if you touch, like if I flex right here, these aren't super, I can push into them because I'm not using those. Whereas if I try to engage those now, I can't push into them. So you see how this
flattens.
So, and I can feel my transverse abdominis here.
Oh, I thought it was lower. Does it go from low all the way
this
up?
This is my belly button right here.
Yeah.
Your
yeah,
transverse abdominis looks like
was,
this.
Yeah,
so
it's
more into the pubic bone area.
It's
a
whole course.
It's the whole, yeah, so let's look at it again. Okay. So I think there's a picture in here.
They call it the corset muscle.
And I usually cue, just in case.
Oh, I see.
So I
but
usually
it does
cue.
Go all the way down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they
down.
All attach to your pubic.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the reason why I usually cue it down there is because that's the weaker part and it affects the pelvis so much and the lower spine. But yeah. So she's, it's like, it's beneath, it's the superficial muscles of the rectus and beneath everything, even beneath
it's
the obliques.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's some pictures where they peel it back so you can kind of see the layers of it, and they don't have that in here.
If you guys look at Joe Muscolino, it's a book called Know the Body. He has all of the origins and the insertions and has what's superficial, what's intermediate, and what's a deep muscle. And it tells you like what actions those muscles often help you do.
That's nice.
It's a book.
Know the body.
Know the body.
Mm-hmm.
Now when people are doing core exercises and they think they're stabilizing their core and their, but they develop the
rectus abdominis.
Could they be doing that accidentally, like thinking that they're working their core and they get this and they get excited and think that they've done something?
Well, it's
part
of their core, it's just not their core. So when they're doing all their crunches, they should also be doing
side bends
and, you know, whether it's with a kettlebell or whatever, you know, there's planks, side planks, all those things.
I like those primal movements. I think they're so fascinating. In the yin immersion last year, she talked about if you were to crawl around like an animal on all fours, you'd have the best core.
Yeah.
Your core.
I always call it like animal yoga.
Yeah. I wanted to do that.
Bear crawls.
It was on the schedule for a week.
Well, it's like if you think about how we developed our bodies too, crawling, right, gave us the muscles to walk, right? So I watched that with my son. So, and the different things that you have to do to get the core muscles in when we couldn't sit up yet. You know, when you have to like roll to the side and get himself up and all those lateral muscles and everything. So it's really
grasshoppers a lot, or mountain climbers. So grasshoppers, you're in plank and it's like basically bringing, you know how you bring your nose to your, or your knee to your opposite elbow.
Yeah.
You have to bring your shin to your forearm.
Oh, wow.
right shin to the left forearm. Mm-hmm. So you have to really suck those muscles up into your spine to make the room for that to happen. You know, and mountain climbers is where you're bringing your foot, you're bringing the right leg up to the outside of the right of the hand. So again, you're having, that's going to work a lot of your psoas, just because it's not crossbody.
Yeah,
all good fun stuff.
All fun stuff. We're in the bouncy generation where you pull all the babies up. I think of it like that cocoon, the story about the cocoon. If you poke all, like if you see it, one struggling and you try to rescue it, it will die. Because it needs the struggle in order to survive.
Right.
So it struggles its way out of the cocoon.
To build
and
muscles.
Then
it's
amazing.
Yeah,
that's
amazing.
We want to prop the kids up now.
Right.
We're trying to tell parents, don't do that anymore. That's not
right.
Good.
Right.
Let them struggle.
Right.
So I would think the transverse abdominis, if we're doing natural free movement and not in this sedentary, for sedentary world, the transverse abdominis is going to engage on its own because you're never going to lose your natural breathing, right? We get very up here and we're not connected down here, and then this is released and distended, and so then we're trying to do the big movements, we're skipping that natural, you know. And then if you're getting your heart rate up and you're breathing heavy, the deeper you're breathing, if you're breathing properly, then it's going to naturally, transverse abdominis is connecting.
Yeah, it doesn't have to do with video games.
No!
Getting all that going, but none of the stuff that releases it and moves it through. And,
we've come so far from our natural ways in our body. Our body hasn't done anything different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, our brain is developing in a different way, but our bodies are still the same.
Right. That's what I would say to clients. It's like, it's not about your worth. It's not about what, if you're placing the demands, your body responds. If you're not placing the demands, your body has nothing to respond to, so it's not gonna cultivate. It's not like, oh, how does she get to have those muscles? Where does she buy those? She's placing demands on her body.
Right. Your body craves challenge.
Yeah.
Or as Tyler says, everybody wants to be a champion, but nobody wants to train like a champion.
Best bomber sticker. Just move.
Just move. It makes so much sense. Just move.
You were talking about breath, and then I went backwards, and then they have this section in here too, which is good to read. It talks about the breathing anatomy.
What did you call that breath that we did in where we're
Kapalabhati. Kapalabhati, it translates to skull shining. And then there's rapid, then there's breath of fire. They're actually often said to be the same thing, but they're not actually. So technically, Kapalabhati is skull shining breath, and breath of fire is breath of fire. The only difference is how rapid or slow you go. Skull shining, I want to say, is slower, and I might have that in inverse, so I will look it up. But, and breath of fire is more rapid. So, it is breath of fire, skull shining. Okay? From what I'm understanding, and I will double check that, but they are two different breaths. Often, people don't know that they are.
And Kapalabhati is. Both of them are within
Kapalabhati. Kapalabhati is the name of skull shining, which is one breath technique, and breath of fire is another one. You will hear a lot of people say, no, Kapalabhati is breath of fire. I'm just giving you this because it's actually not true, but most people think it is, okay? So I only know that because the Kundalinis are very specific about their breathings, and it's Kapalabhati and it's breath of fire, and it's different. And so if you look it up, you'll see. It's I believe it's Kapalbhati that's slower.
And I'll double check.
Well, I'm trying to think of what, were you in Sophia's sound and breath class?
Yes.
You were. And no. Like on the second week.
Yeah.
And we were doing but through our nose, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And she called that soul shining.
Mm-hmm. That's Kapalabhati.
Yeah.
So it was the slower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, it does talk about in here the diaphragm of the lungs. And then there's a part that says the intercostals and the abdominals. And so this goes back to the diaphragm, which Candace was just talking about. And so it says the intercostals, the external intercostal muscles, run between the ribs in the same direction as the most external sheath of the abdominal muscles. They lift and expand the rib cage for inhalation, like the movement of an old-fashioned pump handle, as it's lifted up from resting position. The internal intercostal muscles run at right angles to the external layer, and they pull the ribs closer together, as well as down and in for exhalation, forced exhalation. So we just talked about that, Kapalabhati. Right, so those muscles. Rib movement is caused by muscles between the ribs called the internal and external intercostal muscles. With an inhalation, intercostals are opening to expand the ribs and increase the space for the lungs. They contract during your exhalation. When they are tight, movement in the ribcage is restricted, and therefore so is the breath. Elongating the intercostal muscles improves your breathing. The abdominal muscles shorten concentrically, pressing the abdominal wall inward, which in turn pushes the abdominal organs up against the relaxed or relaxing diaphragm. So this is talking about how the abdominals are pressing against us when we're inhaling, what's happening there to the diaphragm. In combination with the action of the internal intercostal muscles, this forcibly decreases the size of the chest cavity and pushes air out of the lungs. In yoga, the abdominal muscles are important for what yogis refer to as even breathing, and they are also key elements for breathing exercises. So that's a lot. I mean, that's like a big mouthful of words. But essentially, it's also asking us to pay attention to what our abdominal muscles are doing, because if we want in yoga to have a full and deep and rhythmic breath, we can't always be forcing this deep abdominal pushing in and up, right? Because it's going to shorten our space in our chest for breath. And so you have those experiences, right? And this is why I know when people are overexerting themselves in yoga or doing too much core or trying to do too much, they stop, the breathing stops, right? It's like short breaths. So just to be mindful that our diaphragm muscles drop, right? They're actually contracting. This is like counterintuitive, but when the diaphragm muscles are contracting, I get that right, yeah, to open up space in our lungs for air when we inhale, right? They drop down, the diaphragm drops. It's a muscle that contracts down. And then when we exhale, it releases, the diaphragm releases, and it presses up to release breath. So it's like this. Inhale, goes down, exhale, it releases like a jellyfish. That makes sense? So that's all that it's saying. It's just, you know, too much abdominal pulling up is not going to give you room to breathe in. Right, so that is part of also abdominals, core, breath, giving yourself room to breathe. All right, good stuff. What kinds of core exercises can we go over? I don't think they have any. Do they have any core in here?
There's a section back here.
Core strengthening? Oh, okay. There is a core strengthening. Let me get to it. Just I can give you these poses, and I'll give you a couple more. If I don't see them.
Mm-hmm. part of that more categories section in the asanas.
Okay. Can I see arm balancing? Probably before arm balancing.
It's like 30 pages or so.
And then sacrums and twisting.
It's right after trichinosis.
Okay. Forward bends. It's mythical. More categories.
It's just before the forward bends.
Okay. More, it's called more categories. Lateral side bending, right? So they're considering that as part of core in this group.
I don't know if that's the only one in here, but I saw that one.
Yeah, and then they have Ardha-Navasana, a half boat. And they have what I've done in class before, the Jhatara Parivartanasana, which is the legs going side to side. And that's all that they show in here. But I'm going to bring out some more.
Does anybody have a page number for what we're looking at?
125.
So, some good ones. So, they don't have plank in here, but you know, the plank is really the blueprint of all of our core. So we did opposite arm, opposite leg, plank. I'm just going to this is just another thing. Forearm planks, boat pose, leg lifts, Jhatara Parivartanasana, and that's all I have in mind too. So I'm just going to read this really quick. Almost all activities in core tend to overwork and understretch the hip flexors, right? So, because most of these core abdominals, things like this, I'm working my hip flexors, right? So I'm constantly working the hip flexors. Even if I do this, I'm still working my hip flexors, right? Except if you're in something like plank. It's important to be aware of this when you're instructing abdominal strengthening asanas, because it's easy to allow the hip flexors to do the work if you're not carefully instructing. We talked about that earlier. So stretch the abdominal muscles after you work them. Don't sequence intense abdominal work after intense back bends. If you've done a lot of back bending, a ton of core after, you're doing the same thing with the psoas. You just open the psoas and then you're going to like contract the psoas a lot. So that's why it's like core is good to stabilize the back after you do a bunch of back bends and then do some other things. We want to look at, when we're looking at core, we're looking at primarily what areas do you think are at risk if we're doing core incorrectly?
Our low back.
Yeah, for sure. Our low back. So just, you know, saying it again. The airbag to the spine. And also, you know, things like plank is not just the pelvis, but also sinking in the chest. But again, stabilizing that whole torso. Okay.
So our posture is immediately asked if we look at it functionally. You know,
yeah.
People will end up overusing their pecs and going right. To the kyphotic hurt and the neck. You know,
yes.
And then they stand up and that's what they're doing, and then they're load bearing.
Right. Right, exactly. And you know, with Chaturanga, I mean, Chaturanga is a major core, right? And we see that one just done so incorrectly for our bodies, probably, and it's overused that pose in so many vinyasa classes, and there's not a lot of attention because in the asana sequence of Surya Namaskar, it's like you're in and out of these poses so fast, and that would really break down Chaturanga, but it's like a really important pose, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, if you can get the planks good, that's why I like to do planks at the beginning of all my classes, because that's when I look at people's bodies, and I see who is weak in their abdominals or in the, you know, what their proclivities are in the body, what their samskaras are in their body, their tendencies. Because it's that's where you can really tell, you know, where they're tight, where they're holding. You know. Okay. Any questions? Any questions about that? I think we kind of covered core. It's a good stuff. Twisting. Twisting is core also. And you're utilizing your obliques, your internal and external oblique muscles, the muscles that are moving your rib cage. So twisting, what's really important for the pelvis, do you think? You hear me say this a lot in class, but some of you don't come to my classes, so you may not hear it. Whenever I teach core, I always talk about stability of the pelvis first. Because if you don't stabilize your pelvis, then what we were talking about earlier, twisting your pelvis, that can really hurt your back. And your lumbar, believe it or not, does not have as much rotation as your torso. Okay? So your torso, even though it's big, it feels heavy because of the rib cage, because it's protecting all of our organs, but it actually has more rotation than a lower spine. Okay. What do you think has the most rotation in your body in terms of your spine? Yeah. Your cervical spine. Cervical spine has 180-degree opportunity. Just call it an opportunity. For some of us, it's a real opportunity. I do not have 180-degree rotation in my cervical spine at all, but I try.
Like owls.
I'm always like, I can see on the left side, but if you try to get me on my right, I'm like, ah, nope. So, but when I first figured that out, when someone told me that, I was like, what? We have 100? What? Really? Wow, because back then it was even worse. So yeah, so we do. And so this big rib cage of ours is where we're turning from. We're not turning from the lower back. The lower back, although there's degrees of it, is with the pelvis. It's staying with the pelvis. It's trying to stay neutral. And really, if you can think about it, it's the rib cage that's doing the rotation. Okay, most of the rotation. And what happens in twisting is a lot of times people just move their neck thinking that's the rotation because that's the easiest thing to do. So they're like, yeah, you know, like they're really like looking back as far as they can, but nothing's happened in here. So when you're teaching twisting, I like to think of keeping your chin relatively in line with the sternum as you twist until, of course, you get to like the max of where you're going, and then you can turn your head. But to lead with the head, you're just going to look, and nothing's really going to happen in the torso, okay? So that, and when you're twisting, breath is of primary, I would say, importance with twisting. Because of the way that our spine is. Should I bring in Fred? I call him Fred. Should I bring him in? Let's see if he has any discs. I don't know if he has. A little skeleton.
I'm just trying to understand more
specifically where you're saying twist comes from, because I've always thought of it like you're stabilizing the pelvis, there's like this part of the lower spine, but then there's this whole area above the ribcage, and when we say we're twisting from the ribcage, it's actually the space between that seems to be twisting.
Yes.
And I always consider that space lower back. So when you're
saying,
and so I'm asking like where technically is the
lower
spine
and actually really twisting. It is twisting from some of the like the lats and the lower back, but it's a smaller degree. So I was saying in terms of thinking about the twist, you know, it's like most of the twist is actually coming from the thoracic.
Right, because your lower ribs aren't attached anywhere in the front, so that's why you have that movement, Candice, because your 12th rib is free, and then your 11th rib is attached into cartilage, but it's like shared cartilage for T10 and T9.
So I see what you're saying. Like, is it the it is a little bit of the lower back, right, in a way? I don't know if I'm actually going to be able to show you because this doesn't have any abilities.
That's
unfortunate. But, you know, so it's a very stiff thing. But so we have these, you were talking about the transverse and having also these like facets, right? Like there's hooks. I mean, you can kind of see it here, right? If we create length in the spine, inhaling, when we go to, it does twist. Then we can create the twist, see how there's space, so it allows those joints, it just twists a little bit, but to open up and turn, right? It's hard to see on the screen, I really want to lift up. But when we breathe length, then we can turn, we can twist. You see that a little bit? It's hard to see on the screen, it's not really built that way, but that is essentially what we're doing. If we're creating space, we can actually turn these. They won't get as stuck, right? These joints. That's what I was trying to show. And hopefully I can kind of get that idea just by looking at it, right? These can get stuck and jammed up. So inhaling to create space and length in the spine, and then as we exhale, then we twist. What you don't want to do is fold and twist simultaneously, because that's how you get these guys. Bulging discs and stuff like that, because it jams into this fluid, this sac, right? So it's like, if I teach moving into a twist, that's why primarily for me, if I'm doing a twisting pose like a twisting crescent, I would teach to fold first, so I have a long spine, and then I would teach the exhale and the twist. It's just safer in your body than to say from here, okay, now twist. Because people are going to start folding and twisting, and what's going to happen is they're going to be doing things laterally, and that's when we get stuck, and we start pinching things, and that little jelly donut's going to squish out the side and become a red sandwich.
Don't say jelly.
And now we got jelly donuts flying everywhere. So that's my point in twisting, is really length, turning, and trying not to fold and turn, because this lateral movement is really tricky with twisting. And that's definitely how people get herniated discs and bulging discs. Okay. So inhale for length, exhale twist. So inhale for length, exhale twist. Okay, and that's for any twist. If that's the one thing I can impart, that's the most important, I feel, and the stability of the pelvis, keeping the pelvis from moving backward in space, like if you're in a seated twist. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, like I did this pose today, people will twist and then their whole pelvis rotates. And so I go around and I literally press their pelvis back to neutral, take them out of the twist, and lift them up and move them, you know, so that I don't see that. I want to see a flat-ish sacrum, a wide sacrum. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Questions? So you would do that in any pose. So even if I were upright and I were doing a twisting triangle, I'm going to look for the same thing, right?
right? Engagement of the belly, relatively parallel to the ceiling. And then when they go to twist, inhaling and lengthening them first, exhaling and turning them. And then once they're in this pose, if the pelvis twists a little bit, it's like some people, they have SI joint issues and some things in their lower back. It's not necessarily super bad to see a little bit of that rotation here, but I'm looking at this, I'm looking at the spine.
So can you, without hurting yourself, can you show us what we would look for if somebody is
let's look at bodies and I'll show you.
Okay.
Does anybody want to practice this? Does anybody know that triangle?
Just a triangle?
And you can use blocks.
I do.
You want to do it?
I think I might have a lot of too much mobility right around my sacrum, which is part of the reason why I was asking that question.
Yeah.
You know, like right. I got so good at stabilizing that I actually think I twisted too much.
I see. Okay.
So, all right. Yeah.
So we'll have you just do this. We'll have you come into a wide-legged stance, have that back heel slightly in, and I'll have you have your hands on the blocks, and we'll start here. And then we'll kind of look at Candace's pelvis. Then I'll inhale her forward, and she'll just take a gentle twist. So you don't have to do the whole twist where you're twisting here. You could even have your hand here and just do a twist that's not as big.
Okay.
And then we'll look at her pelvis so you guys can see this, okay?
And what we're looking for. Do you want front leg that side?
We're just going to kind of go around you.
Okay. Have them just walk around.
So everybody, come walk around. Just see her in the pose right now. And just see if you can see her hips and what she's doing. Okay? So when you're looking at these poses, you're looking at stability of the pelvis, which is side to side and front to back, right? Even on those sides. So here, come around to the side, you can see that maybe she could even engage the front of her pelvis could lift up a little bit. She could actually breathe a little bit of life into that lower back. Yeah? And so that feels pretty stable, yeah? I mean, it's stable from side to side, front to back, right? So when she comes into a twist, I would ask her to draw her navel center in, extend the length of her spine through her sternum. As she exhales, take her left arm out to the left. All right, so this is what I do with a lot of twisting if I really break it down. Because now I'm going to ask her to then open this left arm up to the sky and start to turn from her navel center without moving her pelvis. So she may not go as far. Most people won't go as far. Because what they usually do is just swing the arm back behind them, and then they think that's a twist. But if you have the arm in alignment with the collarbone, you can see she's really rotating from her spine. She kept really stable, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
You can maybe pick up the front of your pubic bone. There you go. That's a little bit better for her lower spine. And then ask that, lower your left hand down, and pause, and just relax. Yeah, it's a big chest. Yeah. Good. And then you can switch your legs. You okay?
Yeah.
So for her, when I come back behind her, just see her pelvis. Yeah. And would your stance normally be that short?
She can have it short. It's okay.
Yeah. Stability, short for stability, wide for stability,
okay.
Long if you really want to open up. See on this side, she's a little bit tilted. Right?
Yeah.
Do you see how she tilts a little bit to one side or right?
Yeah.
It's a little wet.
That's a little higher. So to get it not to be as high, usually it's something to the effect of the legs, right? See how she just affected her legs?
Mm-hmm.
She drew her outer hip back. Sometimes you could say bring your inner thighs together, but that fixed it, right? It corrected it. Now, the other thing she's still doing, she does a little dumping into her lower back, so pick up the front of her pelvis, there she is. See that? Much, much better. And now extend your right arm out to the side. Inhaling length from her spine. So she always wants to get long in the spine first. As you exhale, draw your navel in for you, especially pick up the front of your pelvis again. There you go. And then exhale, turn from your left upper arm and your rib cage. So I just did it that way so she really is focused in the core, and look how stable her pelvis is.
opposite. She's using her legs. Do you guys see how much she's using her legs?
This is my remedial broken leg.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And you know, for her, the pelvis dropped a little bit. I'm not too concerned about that because her waist is really long. But see how it contracts her waist? So I might say press your left thigh on the back. It's more of the thigh pressing back to get the length. Okay?
And then you can exhale them.
She really worked her legs like crazy.
Mm-hmm. And so that is what we want to do. Work our legs in those poses because the legs, if they're stable, if the hips are stable, then you're really twisting in your upper body. And, you know, she was really good. I instructed her to bring her arms out for that reason, right? Because what happens to a lot of people is they'll do this and they'll go into the twist and they'll just go like this. Wait, not twist. Wait, here, twist. They go like this. And they're just using their arm. You'll see that a lot in classes. And so if you instruct it where the arm comes out to the side with the collarbone and you steer from there, you have to kind of engage, right, the obliques, the upper chest, the shoulder blades are down the back, all those things. And then look, like I see, I contracted here. So I gotta lengthen that leg back. So just steer them from their hips and their legs. Try not to do any big movements with people's shoulders and stuff when they're twisting. I mean, you can at the end of the pose, but like most of that is gonna be corrected through the legs. Through the legs and stabilization of the pelvis. Okay? All right, does that make sense? You guys all saw that?
Mm-hmm.
A nice, do you want to do like a nice adjustment? Do you want to see what an adjustment might look like? So I adjusted her by just pressing the leg back, but you can really open up a person's pose. You want me to show you one?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. Who wants to do a twist? Thank you. Thanks for offering the body.
What is this pose called?
This is twisting triangle. Yeah. Parvrita Trikonasana.
And you really feel your core activate when you're
right? All the obliques. So you could teach a class of just obliques and you would do a lot of like triangle, twisting triangle, some of these standing twists. So bring your hands back a little bit, some of your shoulders. There you go. And her legs are good, right? In this pose, it's heel to heel, a little bit wider for most people, and about one leg's distance between the feet. And the back foot, so she has her back foot pointing almost forward. Some people would say a little bit out to the side. I'm not a stickler about that necessarily. I think it's fine the way that she has it. Her calf muscle looks fine. A lot of times people turn their leg out because of their calves and their Achilles are really tight. So nonetheless, her hips are even, right? Do you guys see that? She's really stable here. Outer hips are firm. She looks good in her lower back. She's not dumping at all. Right? Do you guys see that? She's good, okay? So on the inhale, lift your sternum, lift your belly, lift your sternum, lengthen through your spine. As you exhale, take your right arm out alongside your collarbone. From your belly, your obliques, your rib cage, exhale, open. So start to turn open towards the wall. Good. So now, just reach up. She looks good. She has nothing moved in her legs.
My right leg is working
It's working. I can see
it's like shaking a little bit. Her left hip dropped moderately.
But that's okay. It's like a little bit is okay. So now, one way that I would adjust her, let's say, just for me, swing your right hip out. If she got really contracted here, I would you always want to put your hand on something that's really big, so like the shoulder, right? And the hip, shoulder and hip, and I would literally just lengthen her like that. And I'm holding her, right? I'm right up against her. And then I would maybe open, but I'm not going to do that because she's at her max, and then let her go. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see this the other way because this leg is shorter than this.
And then
I'm curious how it changes.
Yeah. Before I step away from her, I'm going to stabilize her. You see, I have my hand on her sacrum and I'm up against her and I'm like, okay, she's not going to fall over. And then I will tell her I'm leaving him. Just so she knows.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like that. It's huge.
Yeah. Okay, so we can do the other side. Just so you guys can see that. It's like, I'm not turning her, I'm not twisting her. I'm just lengthening her. And I like adjustments like that because you're not going to hurt someone. When people are cranking people in different directions, that's when people get hurt, okay? So if you don't know what you're doing, always stabilize someone by getting next to them. Like, and you can be a little, you know, like hold them, you know, make them feel safe. Don't manhandle them, I'm joking, but like make them feel safe. You're stabilizing them. You're up against them. You're strong, right? So as you inhale, lengthen your chest forward. As you exhale, take your left arm out to the left alongside your collarbone. Take an inhale for length. Exhale, turn your right rib cage towards your left rib cage towards the ceiling. And just did it from the rib cage. So if she were to shorten, let's just hike out your left hip for a moment, just to do it. I would first tell her to take her left leg back, see if I can verbally adjust it. If she doesn't get it, I will just press her thigh back. I'm just pressing her thigh bone back. And I'm grabbing here to create length. I'm not twisting her. I'm lengthening her. If I want to twist her, I'm going to go from the shoulder blade, and I'm just going to press the shoulder blade down. Okay? Does that feel okay?
Yeah. This is just really
good. I can straighten that right now. And then exhale over the left arm down. Okay, and now she's solid, right? I'm leaving you, okay? So, I've seen many people fall over, and that's why you just have to kind of tell them, like, I'm here, and then I'm not here. Because their body gets really comfortable in the adjustment. They're like, ooh. And then they're like, and then they fall over on the ground. Like, whoops, sorry.
So was there a difference in the one
that you were very, pretty even in both, but yes, it was a little different. So, did you guys see that? So it's just elongating and then turning from the rib cage, and then maybe if I'm going to twist her, I'm going to do it from the rib cage. I'm just from the shoulder blade, very gentle shoulder blade. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not any cranking, no cranking, lengthening. And so when you're adjusting people, think of the cues as you're teaching. If I'm telling her to inhale and lengthen, and exhale, turn from the rib cage. That's what I'm going to do with my adjustment. I'm going to inhale and lengthen her, exhale, twist her, and I'm going to breathe with her so that I know that she's breathing and I'm breathing and doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you match their energy. Okay? Good. All right. Any questions? You guys want to practice something?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I don't know if it should be on the floor poses or now.
Okay.
I'm twisting.
Go ahead.
It's about being on your moon cycle. I have had so many different teachers telling me different things, and I'm never sure. Like one, I know Brenda on Sunday nights, she's very specific. Like you want to do a gentle, like
a gentle
open
twist
but not a closed twist.
Like okay, yeah. Her. So she's like, that's like the pregnancy model.
Probably she's Iyengar or.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're pregnant, you only do open twisting because you've got the baby inside. So maybe energetically, since we're on our moon and we're wider here and a little bit more fluid here, then that doesn't feel so good for some people, and then there's menstrual cramps and other things, and so she's probably following that kind of energetic trajectory.
What do you mean by open twisting?
We did an open twist today in Jyotishasana. An open twist is opening your belly.
Oh, okay.
And a closed twist is when you close it off. So when you get pregnant, you don't do any closed twisting because you're crunching baby. So open twisting and blood flow.
Yeah.
So that's
more compressing.
Compressing.
Right,
yeah.
So you would consider that to be kind of a general standard to follow, or is there a general
standard? I don't teach that, but
mostly inversions.
I don't really talk about people's moon cycle unless it's inversions usually.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll be like, if you're on your moon or if you feel low energy, you don't have to invert today. But usually I don't really talk about interesting. But that's interesting.
I looked that up yesterday for like yoga poses for, you know, your moon cycle, and it's a lot of back bends.
Yeah, I've seen that. I googled it. I saw different things everywhere I looked, and all the teachers say different things.
Well, because there's also a lot of forward folding classes for your moon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because energetically you're going inside, but they're usually supporting, using bolsters and blankets, the belly. So it feels really good when you're on your moon to to do things like this, where the belly is supported. It has something to rest against.
Some pressure.
Yeah. So for some people, that actually feels really good. So that would be different. You know, that would be a different way of teaching. She probably wouldn't do that because that might be counterintuitive to the way that she's teaching. I don't know. I mean, again,
for cramps and like this.
Yeah.
Mm. And then you breathe. That's awesome.
It can be intense. So it's
that.
Kind of like you're on your
ovaries. Yeah.
So, and you could create, you could use some tool, but yeah, then you're forward folding.
Just breathing into that.
I like that anyway.
I love that.
I do too. It's
awesome.
Also so bad.
And fully relaxing into it. Michelle, so that you
just do that.
It's a psoas release too.
And the deeper you breathe, the more massage you get.
So good.
Thanks for offering that.
Yeah, you'll see also, yeah, you can use blankets, right? You can roll that. You'll see that. These things, right? Or you roll up a blanket on the mountain. And it's similar. It's almost the same spot. You can do the forward fold that way.
Yeah.
And you just like support the body and like contract, doing
yeah.
the lighting out.
Right.
I mean, I've never been pregnant, but it seems like the contraction, the cramps are actually a form of contraction that is expelling the end of the lining of the endometrium.
Totally. It's so good. What else? So twisting, yeah. So there's seated twist, there's standing twist would be like the twisting triangle, twisting Ardha Chandrasana. So twist in Sanskrit is pravrita, P-R-V, let me see if I spell this right. P-T-A, I'm missing a letter.
P-R-A?
Pravrita, P-A-R-V-I-T-T-A, I believe that's right. Pravrita means twisting. So, Pravrita Trikonasana, Pravrita Ardha Chandrasana, Pravrita whatever. Okay, and then when we get into twist, seated twist, there's a lot of like Sukhasana twists you'll see. What else is pretty popular in classes? Twisting these. Marichyasana A is this pose, but then it went to C, and that was the twisting pose. We did this today. You either do it like this, with your arm like that, or some people even bind it eventually. Or elbow outside and you're twisting, and I'm twisting my pelvis. So make sure I don't do that. And Jagannathasana. Sometimes people twist this pose. You just do like a little gentle twist. There is a twist in the torso as you fold, after you fold. What else is a good twisting pose? This one you might see sometimes. Bharat Vajrasana twist, the little arm bind. So that's quite common in some kind of vinyasa flow classes. So these are some of them. I don't know what's in your class book here. And then we've got the spinal twists, of course, you know, everyone's favorites. Knees together or wrapping a leg, and there's all sorts of different variations of that. What else am I missing here? And then, you know, even if you're in inversions, you could do twisting variations in inversions where you're like up and doing twists.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then we were doing the, what were we doing today? Side crow is a twist.
Yeah.
Right? We did Paschasana. We did this basically on blocks and we twisted, right? And then we went into the side pose. So those are all deep twists. Like you can't really get into side crow until you've done some twisting, because it's a big twist to get into basically chaturanga, with your whole body balanced on one side. That's a huge twist. That's why I paired it with the twist today.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So big difference from side to side, right?
Yeah.
And clearly there's many parts at work. So any one of them that's, or many of them that are contributing to that difference.
Yeah.
But is there a way to kind of, are there general rule, like your one oblique is weaker or you're tighter, or is there anything?
That's a good question.
So you have to look at it individually.
Yeah, I probably have to look at it individually. It's also mechanics too, because it's like some people distribute their weight differently too, which is partially why they might not be able to get into it also. So there's a
structural,
I think there's a lot, a lot of factors. But if they can really twist, like that's why I do the Vishasana first, because I can see who's able to really get there. Because if some people can't get their elbow outside of their knee just sitting, they're not going to be getting into that pose. It's just not going to happen. So when you're considering some poses, do prep poses so you can look at people's bodies, mm-hmm. and then you can kind of tell them, or you'll just know, like, okay, that person's probably not going to get into it, but I can coach them this way, or they're going to be fine, and I don't have to look at them as much as maybe somebody over here who really is going to need some direction. So like for there, your right knee is really far forward. So I would take your right knee back, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So then is that
helps twist it a little bit, yeah.
Does that mean I have left? Is it tight?
And
this here?
No, it's just, I think it's just body awareness in the pose, maybe. Drop your left
really
hip.
Tight.
Drop your left hip down. There you go. So that was really what was going on there. It was like your right hip wanted to drop lower than the left.
Could your dominant, even though it's like in the one with today, it was both hands on the ground. Could your dominant side or dominant hand have an impact on?
Yeah. Which side of your body you're typically using?
Yeah.
Dominant body.
For me, that might be tightness that then limits my twist. Like that's why I feel short on my right side, shortened.
Yeah.
So then I'm like,
Yeah. I mean, it could be like a QL muscle. I mean, there's so many different things it could be, right? It could even be the hips, like your right hip is dropping.
My right hip is all screwed.
Yeah. So it's just imagining your body on that side that your left hip's dropping. Yeah, that's what you want to find. So that kind of feels weird, right? Feels off, but it's actually even though.
Okay.
So it's more like you're tilting laterally on one side, I think is what's happening.
If her right hip is dropping, I wonder, would that be an indication of a weakness in that hip? And that is the side that she broke.
Yes.
So doing more focus work on that right side to build that up.
Yeah, it's weak, but it's like, it just might identify whether it's weak because it's tight or,
Right, I see what you're saying.
Tightness.
Mm-hmm.
Over.
I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot, our bodies are so fascinating. So for her, it's instructing something, seeing if it lands, and if it lands, if it sticks too. Like for her, dropping her left hip feels off because her other one feels like it's in a different place.
I think it's also engagement of the inner thigh.
And then her body forgets. And so it's like a constant reminder, right, of like trying to get her. Even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
Even just holding like this.
Yeah, that's a nice
work
for her. Yeah. Good. Yeah, it's a lot. So, core, twisting. What else?
Let me see if there's anything else I want to talk about in twisting.
Twisting, twists. Marichyasana.
It's right after back bends.
Let me see what other poses. You guys don't need to know all of this stuff because some of you aren't going to encounter it all. So I'm just kind of being aware of that. Twist also with digestion. The abdominal organs. Oh yeah, I forgot to say this. when you twist, you'll see this in your manual. I saw it in there, actually, about the squeezing. They call it squeezing and soaking. When you squeeze something, like the abdominal organs, and then you release it, then all this fresh blood rushes to that area. So that's why it's also good for abdominal organs and digestion as well. It helps the discs keep them fluid, because that same action of squeezing soap helps the fluid in our spine. Twists assist in moving lymphatic fluid through the body, and they strengthen the muscles of the posterior spine and the anterior spine. They are important for good posture, yes. They can be therapeutic for the back. They neutralize the spine for back bends. They counteract the quality of stagnation. I love to, like, I always do twists for detoxing. You know, like, if I used to do this class that I called the turkey twisting class, which was after Thanksgiving. Because you know how fat we all feel when we eat, like a whole Thanksgiving dinner. I'm just like, why do we do this to ourselves? And then, so that was always, like, a popular class. It was like, all right, eat all you want, and come the next day, just, you know, puke it out. So that's always funny. You don't want to do a lot of twisting all the time if you do have discs. So, because the disc is bulging, the twists are probably what created some of that. So you don't want to keep twisting and twisting and, you know, making it worse. Let's just say that. Breathe in your twists. So common, obviously, injuries, let's say, in twist contraindications, risks would be the head and the shoulders, if you're just doing your neck, let's say in a twist, straining the neck. If one side of the waist is collapsing or shortening, then you can get kind of disc issue, which is what we were talking about. If the back is rounding, you can compress your spine, okay? And the lower back, because the hips might be twisting with you. Any questions about that?
Here's pictures of the pelvic diaphragm too. Let's show this.
Are there special things that you can do that will help prevent the hyperextension of the SI joint? It feels like
firming your outer hips in.
Just firm the outer.
That's that action of firming the outer hips. Really getting. Because, yeah, the SI joint dysfunction is really, that's another thing about twists. That's where most people hurt their SI joint dysfunction, I think, personally. Don't you think? Twists, both of you?
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, like, probably in yoga, for sure.
Yeah.
I see it more with people rounding.
Uh-huh.
In their back,
rounding.
Like lifting.
Lifting.
That's typically where we see it. So
that makes sense. So in yoga, a pose like that would be
like maybe in
a forward fold.
Mm-hmm. Forward fold, or if somebody is not protecting their spine in cat cow, probably.
Yeah,
like
maybe
the cat portion of it.
Uh-huh.
I know that when my SI was hurting me, it killed me to do any sort of flexion.
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah, because they do have it in here, but God knows what it looks like. Let's see. The SI joint is here, right? It's hard to see. It's really not supposed to move a lot. Okay, there's some subtle movement in there, in this joint. But what happens is people will, you know, if they have a lot of lordosis in their back, some people, they'll splay these sit bones a lot in yoga, and it actually starts to create too much space there in the SI joint. So for those people, I'm always telling them to firm in. And you can see it, because when they're bent over, like literally these sit bones are going, they're like splaying way out. And you're like, ah, so you're like pulling them in. You're like pulling these sit bones in. And that's gonna help. And that happens in forward folding a lot. So I think that's where I felt the most. But also in twisting, because if you are twisting and tweaking your pelvis or turning your pelvis, you're probably going to feel that also. Triangle pose.
Well, you have that one too. Huh?
I know, look at it. Triangle pose is really good for the SI joint, apparently.
Okay.
It's like an SI joint, like love. So I tend to do that pose a lot for mine because I used to have SI joint dysfunction. I don't have it as much. I mean, it still happens. It happens in back bending for me, forward bending, anything, any movement with my pelvis. But for some reason, yeah, these triangles feel so good. What else? Should we do a little break? Because you guys look like you could use one.
Yeah. I definitely need to go to that one.
Let's do that. Just a tiny little...